woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne. Have white skin, got a satin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire sky. Well-dressed man, waiting on the last plane. Standing in the gallows, with my head in the noose. Any minute now, I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and time's strange. Locked in tight.
Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 10th of September, 2018. It's a Monday. You've tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 7 minutes after 8 a.m. Arizona time. Your mind is your primary weapon. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Tell your friends about the broadcast. We'll continue our block of instruction from last week. We're discussing the part about Sun Tzu on the art of war. Have some border news. Also, had a caller last week. It was within the last couple of minutes. And had asked the question of about getting the word out of about when the insurgents are doing their thing, how is it that they can get the word out? Now, we covered quite a bit of that on the previous week, and then we also looped back around and reinforced the lesson on Thursday over on the micro effect. And there's numerous examples of insurgencies using information to a bypass, especially when you have an area where it's controlled by a hostile government. You use the example of the Zapatistas in Mexico, just another peasant uprising that swept down out of the hills and took over some small villages and a city of 100,000. And then, of course, the military comes on in and within a week or so drives them out back up into the mountains. And, of course, the government-controlled media in Mexico got to give their version of the story. But the thing was that the Mexican government wasn't as quite prepared for what they were up against because the Zapatistas had tapped into the internet and were able to get their message out worldwide. And there were other examples of broadcasts and the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, the FMLN in El Salvador, Sri Lanka, all of them having radio broadcast transmitters. And the goods and bads about that, some of these were in very remote areas up on the top of volcanoes. But then the problem was is the logistics, and then they had to have 100 people devoted to protect the transmitter itself. Some of them are in foreign neighboring countries that might be sympathetic. And then there's the parts of about the difference between a newspaper, a rebel newspaper, or handbills, flyers that are passed about. Interesting study of how people respond to the information. If you go in and just paper a shopping mall, putting flyers in people's windows, or if you hand them out face-to-face, there's a better tendency that the people will actually read and retain the information that was handed to them directly and not indirectly. There's also a few of them have set up TV deals. A lot of it has to do with the professionalism of the flyer itself. If it looks sloppy, the people aren't going to take it serious. So the more professional it can look. And then there's the other aspect of about now with the advent of the internet and being able to bypass the government news outlets and the instantaneous communication worldwide to be able to educate the people on your cause, possibly even retaining human rights groups, non-governmental organizations, NGOs, to the cause to help. And then there's also the part of about you may have a government in exile that they'll have access to the media. Sometimes the media in a country that's not related directly or a bordering nation, they'll want to report on the items or the issues or the events, but sometimes they're reluctant because they don't want to give the appearance that somehow they're supporting the insurgents. And then the parts of about how the longer you can have a news item, that the longer and the more reinforced it'll be in people's minds. If there's a bombing that happens relatively quickly, it'll get reported on and then quickly lost. Other news items will come along and it'll keep falling further and further back. But if you have a hostage situation and you release one or two people a day, and then that's always in the news and it's always on the forefront of people's minds. So it's the idea. And also to craft the news. And then there's the parts of about the newsletter or the newspaper and the different audiences that you have. The one audience is your people, the second audience is the enemy, and the third audience could be the opposing military, as to where you might have to craft two or three different messages. Now, a flyer can get out urgent information, especially if you're having an insurgency that covers a wide area, that you may have certain phases of the insurgency going on in one area, but another insurgency may be in a different phase of the insurgency, and the information that's happened in Sector A doesn't necessarily affect Sector B. So by having flyers that are able to be generated in one specific area for their specific situation that is occurring at that time, to keep your people informed of about what's going on, the excesses by the government to crack down, however you see necessary to get the word out. And then you might have a larger newspaper, as to where then you'll have several different issues, and then that would be distributed over a larger area, as to where it'll inform the people, the insurgents, the population, on what's actually occurring, not necessarily in their neighborhood, but maybe in an adjoining area. So that's that aspect of, I hope that kind of answered that question of it. If you can access the archives over at the Micro Effect last Tuesday. Let's see what else. I have some border news. Talked about the call last week. Bob Miner, if you'd like to give him a call and give him some words of encouragement, telephone is 701-251-2365, 701-251-2365. His last name is spelled M-I-N-E-R, and you call in, it'll ask you to enter in the first three digits of his last name, and then you'll have about 7 to 10 seconds to leave a message of words of encouragement. Let's see. Had a kind of questionable thing of, you know, everything's all in the media nowadays about this shadow ban or casting and delisting and everything. Now, I do acknowledge that eventually it worked its way through and was successful, but that was because there were a bunch of lawyers that were willing to take up the case, because other than that, chances are a private person would not have the money it would require to take a court issue all the way to the Supreme Court and prevail. And so part of what we're discussing is with this shadow banning, whether it's Twitter or Google or Apple or all the old nine yards of all these social media outlets, is the question of, are they a private corporation versus a public utility? But we had, there was a baker in Colorado that didn't want to make a wedding cake for a couple of faggots. There certainly appears that there was information that these people had shopped around just to make an issue about it. There was also a pizza parlor that didn't want to have a wedding reception. So those are a couple of examples of about private corporations that said, nah, we don't want you around here. Now, it's odd that when somebody gets delisted or shadow banned or removed from some of these social media websites, then, of course, because of the way that they've been demonized, then it seems to be a good thing. So a lot of this boils down to political correctness. So if it applies on one side of somebody saying, no, we don't want you around here, a private corporation saying, we don't dig your politics, but then again, how the hypocrisy from the left, the social justice warriors, how they'll basically do the same thing that somebody doesn't want to make a birthday cake or have a wedding reception for some faggots. So that's an example of how that is. And I'll acknowledge eventually that there were a team of lawyers that had worked with this guy. I don't know how much it would have cost him out of the pocket, most likely at least $250,000, to take his case all the way through to the Supreme Court. But I don't know. I never seem to hear whatever happened to the pizza parlor. They most likely just crumped and closed their doors and moved on to something else, but that's exactly how it is. So I just find it odd that on one side that they think that it's quite all right and you have to do this because you have to be all inclusive. But then when it always seems to be that the ones that yell tolerance the loudest are usually the most intolerant. So Sun Tzu on the Art of War and the Principles of Guerrilla Strategy and Tactics. All warfare is based on deception, and therefore, when capable, feign incapacity. When active, inactivity. When near, make it appear that you're far away. When far away, that you're near. Offer the enemy a bait to lure him, feign disorder, and strike. When he concentrates, prepare against him. Where he is strong, avoid him. Anger is general and confuse him. Pretend inferiority and encourage his arrogance. Keep him under a strain and wear him down. When he is united, divide him. Attack where he's unprepared. Sally out when he does not expect you. These are the strategist's keys to victory. And a quotation is taken from Sun Tzu's essay on the Art of War, the oldest known writing on the subject, predating the Christian era by several centuries. But the striking resemblance to the military axioms of Mao Zedong, it's no coincidence. Mao has studied Sun Tzu thoroughly and acknowledged his debt. Many of the Chinese guerrilla leaders' dicta are, in fact, mere paraphrases of those of the Art of War. If there's anything new about guerrilla war, of which Sun Tzu surprisingly anticipates by 2,000 years, virtually all the questions of the military nature, and it's only in its modern political application. But to put it another way, the specifically modern aspect of guerrilla warfare is in its use as a tool of political revolution. The single sure method by which an unarmed population can overcome mechanized armies, or failing to overcome them, can stalemate them and make them irrelevant. And so to understand how this comes about does not require a study of military tactics so much as of the political problems to which the military methods, the guerrilla methods, may provide a solution. The guerrilla is a political insurgent, the conscious agent of revolution. His military role, while vital, is only incidental to his political mission. His insurgency is dedicated to a single purpose, the overthrow of the government and the destruction of the existing political or social, or it may be, economic system. And in the process of accomplishing the goal, he may have to defeat, and he will certainly have to engage and outmaneuver organized professional military forces. If so, however, his maneuvers, except where immediate survival is at stake, will be undertaken primarily for its political effect. Each battle will be a lesson designed to demonstrate the impotence of the enemy and so to discredit the government that employs it. Each campaign will be a text intended to raise the level of revolutionary awareness in anticipation of the popular majority whose attitude will determine the outcome of the struggle. Guerrilla actions will have certain obvious military objectives: to obtain weapons, ammunition, and supplies, to inflict casualties, to force the enemy to overextend his line so that his communications may be disrupted, and small units picked off one at a time by local superior rebel forces. But psychological and political objectives will be paramount. Local military success will serve the purpose of the guerrilla campaign, does not also weaken the morale of the government and its soldiers, strain the financial resources of the regime, and increase the political pressure on it by creating widespread apprehension and dissatisfaction with the progress of the war, in which there is no progress and no end in sight. Now, obviously, none of this can occur except in the presence of certain distinct social and political conditions, which combine to produce a potentially revolutionary situation, and the successful insurgent presupposes the existence of a valid popular grievance, sharp social divisions, an unsound or stagnant economy, or oppressive government. Now, these factors obtaining revolutionary will start to be, it starts off being far away unless there exists or comes to an existence the nucleus of a revolutionary organization capable of articulating and exploiting popular dissatisfaction with the status quo. Now, in the potentially revolutionary situation, spontaneous insurrections may be expected. They're likely to arise out of almost any sort of social conflict, a strike, an election campaign, a dispute over land or wages or prices or rents or schools or any one of a score of other social problems. Often they'll come in reaction to some act of repression or a fear of, or a fanciful injustice on the part of the governing authorities, as, for an example, when the efforts of the police to curb a popular demonstration turned the demonstration into a riot. Now, in other circumstances, disorder may be deliberately created in Cuba, Algeria, Cyprus, as examples that come readily to mind. The war, the flee, was initiated by the deliberate acts of the revolutionary nucleus, proclaiming its defiance of authority and banking on popular support in an open declaration of revolutionary war. But the means are not important. The important element is the leadership itself. Bandits are not revolutionaries. Looters are not guerrillas. In order to attract a following, the revolutionary leaders must stand on firm moral ground. They must have some greater purpose than the furtherance of personal ambition. Now, this in turn implies an ideology or a clear cause to explain their decisions and the reasons of their insurgency. They cannot be mere opportunists. Now, when the conflict occurs, whether spontaneous or induced, the revolutionary leaders must be capable of explaining and rationalizing its confused and often apparently accidental character. Isolated acts of defiance must be given coherency within a revolutionary frame of reference. The leadership must be prepared to make the most of every opportunity to accelerate the process of social ferment and the political disruption. So the first task of the revolutionary cadre must be to relate each incident in each phase of the conflict to a great cause, so that revolutionary violence is seen as the natural and moral means to be desired end, and the masses of the people are increasingly involved. That goes back to our study of about how to get the word out, how to spread the word about the excesses of the government. Now, the struggle cannot be allowed to seem meaningless or chaotic. It must be given a progressive character in all its phases. It must arouse great expectations and appear crucial at every stage so that no one can stand outside of it. Now, the precise cause itself is not of great consequence. One is often as good as the other. In Cuba, for example, the corruption of the Batista regime and its illegitimacy were seemingly sufficient causes for the well-to-do middle class, so long as the members individually did not take any great personal risk, but merely sympathized with and abetted the active revolutionaries. When the son of a middle class were imprisoned or killed or tortured for their activities, oppression became the more urgent cause. Economic nationalism was the real cause of the rich and ambitious industrialists and entrepreneurs who opposed Batista. Political ambition, which could not be avowed, and a sense of social injustice, which could, were the causes that drove the frustrated youth of the poor white-collar class to become the cadre and the greatest zealots of the revolution. And on the other hand, the landless campesinos, the economically deprived mecheros of the great sugar plantations, the squatters of the Sierra Maestre, were driven by actual hunger, by real oppression, and by longing for a security of the land of their own under a just social system, and the motivations that transcended any question of moral or political causes. The nominal causes varied according to the local situation. The constant, consistent appeal of the revolutionary leadership was broader, being based on a democratic, egalitarian ideology linked to notions of social justice long accepted in Cuba. Because there was nothing new about Castro's band of humanism, because it was written into the Cuban Constitution. And there was a clear political goal, and that was the overthrow of Batista regime and the complete destruction of or severance from everything that supported it. Now, I see we're down at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, I will talk about the overthrow of Batista, because it was presented as a panacea and the remedy of all existing evils. Today is the 10th of September, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back in just a couple, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be right back.
Well, it's no fun being an illegal alien. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 10th of September, 2018. It's a Monday. You tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 36 minutes past 8 a.m. Arizona time on Monday. Your mind is your primary weapon. The first 30-minute block of instruction today, it took care of a few admin things. I started up back to our discussing the part of about Sun Tzu on the art of war, the war of the fleet. Specifically about the cause and as an example against the Batista government. Have a little bit of border news. You know, we also covered the call we got at the end of last week's broadcast of about the ability of the insurgents to get the word out. And there's multiple points that, you know, who are we trying to get the word out to? Are we trying to get it out to the insurgents to communicate when the next attack is going to occur? Are we trying to reach the people, the sea that the guerrilla swims in, to notify them of the situation on how, like in the example of the Zapatistas in Mexico, that the state-owned media outlets weren't telling the people what was going on, so the Zapatistas used the instant internet to bypass that and to get their word out internationally of about what was really going on and their protest against NAFTA and their landless peasants, that they only saw the problem getting worse with the advent of NAFTA. But it also had given out Bob Miner's telephone number. Now, I also have Stephanie Miner's mailing address. That is, the last name is M-I-N-E-R, and it's 7607 95th Street Southeast, Forbes, North Dakota, 58439. I say again, 7607 95th Street Southeast, Forbes, North Dakota, 58439. Now, of course, you know, it's one thing to focus on Bob because of his current living conditions, but, you know, Stephanie's out. She doesn't have a real high-paying job. Everything in North Dakota is really spread out. She's spending a lot of time meeting these court dates and going over here for parenting classes, and it's burning up a lot of fuel. She's trying to do her best to keep that aspect of it again. And, you know, and I know that North Dakota doesn't have a real high population density, but I know there's listeners up there in the North Dakota area that might be willing to help out there and to take care of the things that are occurring there in the Miner farm. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com, and that's Alpha Lima Tango Hotel Alpha Bravo Echo Bravo 762@hotmail.com. And as always, we dedicate this broadcast to Lily Grace Antoinette. Now, back to our study of about Sun Tzu on the art of war, because the overthrow of Batista in Cuba was presented as a panacea, as the remedy of all existing evil, and as a cause, it related and made understandable each isolated political development, whether it was the assassination of a policeman, the martyrdom of a terrorist, the suppression of civil liberties, or a public demonstration demanding their restoration. Any disruption of the ordinary routine, anything that helped to undermine the regime, was held up as a skirmish or a battle in a great crusade. This state of mind prevailing, the process of cutting away Batista's support and increasing the pressure against him both inside and outside of the country, continued according to a pattern that's already we've already examined in detail. But for those of you that are smart enough to have a paper and pencil and actually take notes and not just have your itching ears tickled by something that you want to hear, I'm going to give you some principles. And it really distills a lot of these lessons of about insurgency down. Number one, an unstable political situation marked by sharp social divisions and usually, but not always, by a foundering or stagnant economy. Number two, a political objective based on firm moral and ideological grounds that can be understood and accepted by the majority as the overriding cause of the insurgency, desirable in itself and worthy of any sacrifice. Number three, an oppressive government with which no political compromise is possible. And number four, some form of revolutionary political organization capable of providing dedicated and consistent leadership towards the accepted goal. I'll go over those one more time for the benefit of you that are actually trying to pay attention. Number one, an unstable political situation marked by sharp social divisions and usually, but not always, by a foundering or stagnant economy. Number two, a political objective based on firm moral and ideological grounds that can be understood and accepted by the majority as the overriding cause of the insurgency, desirable in itself and worthy of any sacrifice. Number three, an oppressive government with which no political compromise is possible. And number four, some form of revolutionary political organization capable of providing dedicated and consistent leadership towards the accepted goal. Now, there is one final requirement, a clear possibility or even a possibility of success. Until the people believe that a government can be overthrown and it must be the first act of the insurgency to demonstrate this possibility by successful defiance of military force, the attempt will not be made. The revolutionary following will not be found. So you have to demonstrate to the people that it is possible for a success. Now, the specific techniques or tactics of the guerrilla warfare are not, except in unimportant detail, to be learned from the text. They relate always to the specific local situation and are supremely expedient. The guerrilla is, above all, an improviser. The nature of his improvisation depends naturally on immediate and long-range objectives, the terrain, the relative strength of his forces, and those of the enemy, the material means at his disposal, and similar factors. Now, since the guerrilla's numerical strength and arms are inferior to those of the enemy, or he would not be a guerrilla, and that's kind of answers also that question, because oftentimes I hear people posing a question and implying that the government is the insurgency, and you can't, because the insurgency is a war of the weak against the strong. So the government is the strongest. The government has the Air Force. The government has the Army. The government has the Navy. And it's the poor peasant that gets tired of being kicked around that rises up. So it's really impossible for the government to be an insurgent. Just the As an example, back in the 1800s when they were expanding the United States out in the West, just that the cavalry would start taking scalps, that would not make them guerrilla fighters. And just because some soldier over in the jungle puts on a spotted suit and adapts the tactics of the guerrilla, the patrol, the ambush, does not make the government soldier an insurgent. Because the guerrilla's numerical strength and arms are inferior to those of the enemy, or he would not be a guerrilla. And since his most immediate concern is mere survival, the basis of all guerrilla tactics is obviously evasion. And successful invasion means the ability to avoid confrontation, except at one's own choosing, yet always to be able to achieve the local superiority to strike with effect. Quote, if I am able to determine the enemy's disposition while at the same time I conceal my own, writes Sun Tzu, then I can concentrate and he must divide, and if I concentrate while he divides, I can use my entire strength to attack a fraction of his. And again, quoting, the enemy must not know where I intend to give battle, for if he does not know where I intend to give battle, he must prepare in a great many places, and when he prepares in a great many places, those I have to fight in any one place will be few, and when he prepares everywhere, he will be weak everywhere. Back to that adage of insurgency. If you try to guard everywhere, you guard nowhere. Sun Tzu said it, Erwin Rommel said it, and I'm sure a lot of other people said it all the way along. Now, I see we've got about 12 minutes or so before the top of the hour. I got quite a bit more information here about Sun Tzu on the art of war. But I'm going to pause now. I heard a ding earlier in the show, and just to give any listeners time to call in if they want. The telephone is 712-432-0900. And then the voice comes on, and the room number is 957-464, and then the pound sign, and then you can press *6 to unmute your phone, and then you can come up and ask questions of about our presentations here on Liberty Tree Radio and the micro effect of about insurgency, about the education, the strategy, the tactics, the training, the leadership, the planning, the intelligence preparation of the battlefield, the financing, field sanitation, organization, security, communications, the medical, the after-action review, the psychological warfare operations, any number of things that we present here on Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon. So I'll shut up here for a minute in case there's anybody has any question that they'd like to pose. Okay, and nobody's listening today. Now I know there's people that are listening today. I'm listening. Borderland Beat. 26 August 2018, 7 dead, an army captain and 6 armed men die in a confrontation in La Union, Guerrero. Armed men attack soldiers on patrol in the community of El Narano and the municipality of La Union, which borders Michoacan, leaving 6 civilians and a military captain dead, said the spokesman for the Guerrero Coordination Group, Roberto Alvarez Harida. Police sources reported that at 7:40 Friday morning, they received a report that there was an armed confrontation. Consulted by telephone, Alvarez Harita explained that the military was conducting a patrol of the community when they came under gunfire by armed civilians. The soldiers repelled the attack, but 6 gunmen and the army captain were killed in the clash. A police report indicates that captain, identified as Juan Manuel, was shot and wounded in the left leg and abdomen, but died when he was transferred to the hospital. BorderlandBeat.com, 26 August 2018, Monterrey, La Llaga, head of Sicleros, arrested. A suspected regional leader of the Gulf Cartel was arrested yesterday in a joint operation carried out by state and federal agents in Monterrey, Nuevo León. Hector Adrian Le Yigua, Y-E-G-U-A, Lucio Benavides, is believed to be the head of the Cicerones gang, which works with the Gulf Cartel in the theft of fuel, extortion, kidnapping, and trafficking migrants and drugs to the United States. The Cicerones operates in Nuevo León and Tamaulipas in the someplace region of the San Luis Potosi and in northern Veracruz. The arrest yesterday morning of Lucio and his right-hand man, Christian Aaron Hernandez Cablares, is a result of 1 year of collaborative investigation by the National Security Commission and local authorities. Investigations have found that Hernandez was in charge of the Cicerones kidnapping and drug smuggling logistics. The two men were apprehended in the Cumbres Elite neighborhood of Monterrey. Without firing a single shot, the men were in possession of firearms, drugs, mobile phones, and cash at the time of the arrest. August 26, 2018, BorderlandBeat.com, Navy kills 7 criminals in Puebla, including Commander 30. Navy kills 7 criminals in Puebla. Among those killed is Commander 30, alleged leader of the organized crime linked to the several executions in the state. 7 suspected fuel thieves were killed early Sunday during a clash with elements of the Secretary of the Navy near the province of San Miguel Espío in the Puebla capital. Under the autonomy, police sources commented in this media that amongst the now deceased is El Comandante 30, alleged leader of the organized crime linked to several executions in Puebla. The first reports indicated that the events occurred on a dirt road surrounded by agricultural fields near the auxiliary board of San Miguel Espijo, and the elements of the Navy were conducting a surveillance tour of the area when they encountered a group of subjects who apparently milked the pipelines of petroleum. Rolos Mexicano. Upon observing the police presence, the fuel thieves began shooting on members of the Navy, who in turn repelled the aggression, leaving dead at least 6 fuel thieves and the leader, the so-called Commander 30. Due to the foregoing, the area was immediately secured and guarded by the military corps until the arrival of the experts of the personnel of the State Attorney General's office to proceed with the removal of the corpses. Long weapons were found at the site, as well as a van and an LP gas pipe. 28 August 2018, with a video release, El Mencho announces arrival of CJNG and Salamanca, Guanajuato. In the social network, a video is circulating in the Jalisco Cartel Nueva Generación, in which the announcement of the arrival in the municipality of Salamanca, Guanajuato supposedly is a given security to the population and exterminate the criminal cell led by El Maro, Jose Antonio Yepes Ortiz, alias El Maro, leader of the Santa Rosa de Lima cartel. In almost 2.5 minutes, the video shows images of a group of armed, hooded individuals while the narrator explains that they arrived in order to wipe out the thieves, traitor, and Pulinas means grasshopper, as in jumping sides. Also warns that the CJNG will not leave the municipality, and those who work, help, or protect El Moro will be banished not only from the area but from all of Guanajuato. We look for peace and tranquility. Afterwards, 5 narco mantas were displayed, were placed in different points of the municipality, and all signed by the cartel leader, El Mencho. BorderlandBeat.com, 29 August 2018. Rumors labeled them child stealers. They were killed and dismembered. This happened last Friday. I wasn't going to post, but became interested when learning these people were brutally murdered, stemming from rumors. It is possible citizens concluded they were stealing children for organs. Peral, Chihuahua. A 20-year-old female was found dismembered in the early morning hours of Friday, along with a 31-year-old man. With the bodies was a message labeling them child stealers. The young female is identified as Adira Fernandez Sosa Arroz, who lived in Parral. The man from Camango is identified as Sergio Loya Aceves. at the dawn on Friday, August 24, report came in at the discovery of two bodies in the municipality. When officers arrived, they found the mutilated bodies of a man and a woman. The feet, head, and hands had been severed. On top of the bodies was a cartulina with a message reading, "This is what will happen to all who steal children." The male also was left without his organs. The heart, lung, and kidneys were missing. His chest was mutilated, probably by an axe. Apparently, there are rumors on social media of attempts to steal children in the area, but no actual reports from authorities. It's no fun being an illegal or gun. Borderlandbeat.com, 29 August 2018, 12 killed and overnight in the embattled Guanajuato. Armed men perpetrated attacks during the night of yesterday in four municipalities, leaving 12 people dead, including a child under 10 years old. The attacks occurred in Paseo El Alto, where six victims were reported. Records of three people dead, Irapuato 2 and León 1. In Salamanca, a family was attacked with bullets by armed individuals in the community of La Capilla. A couple and their 10-year-old son killed, despite the fact that an operation was set up with the participation of elements of the army. The aggressors fled. In the community of Madurano, in the municipality of Paseo El Alto, there was reports of a confrontation between armed groups that left six dead. According to police reports, during the shooting, two subjects were shot on board a truck and others gunned down a few meters ahead. Borderlandbeat.com, 29 August 2018, Los Chapitos, more big losses in Sinaloa, 26 tons plus. The Secretary of the Navy destroyed four clandestine narco laboratories in the vicinity of Culiacan, Sinaloa, and secured a shipping point in which 26 tons of synthetic drug were secured, as well as 4,200 liters of drugs in liquid states, both with the characteristics of crystal meth. They apparently belong to the faction of the Sinaloa cartel controlled by the sons of Joaquin El Chapo Guzman Larrea. Chemical precursors, equipment, and material used to prepare said drugs was also seized. This action weakens the production and distribution infrastructure of the criminal groups operating in that region. In recent weeks, approximately 90 tons of synthetic drugs have been seized, seizures that significantly affect the financial and operational structure of the criminal groups that operate in the region of the country. Likewise, with these actions, distribution is prevented, preventing these narcotics from reaching young people. The Navy reported that the location of said narco laboratories was derived from technical intelligence work, where it was learned that in towns near Culiacan, there were places dedicated to production of the synthetic drug. In the first development, the location of two narco laboratories were secured in a shipping point in the northern region of the aforementioned municipality, finding in its interior approximately 5 tons and 4,200 liters of alleged synthetic drugs known as crystal. Subsequently, in the Cosala region, southeast of Culiacan, Sinaloa, two other narco laboratories were located with approximately 21 tons of synthetic drugs with crystal-like characteristics. Well, it never seems to be no fun down there in what's going on in Manana land. Every time you turn around, they're chopping off somebody's head or fighting it out in the streets. Oh, see, we're kind of up towards the end of today's broadcast. Your mind's your primary weapon. Today is the 10th of September, 2018. It's a Monday. You're listening to Liberty Tree Radio. And as always, we send this broadcast out to Lily, Grace, Antoinette. It's been fun. It's been fact-filled. So I'll see you back next week, or if possible, maybe you guys can tune in over on the Micro Effect on Thursday. So, same time, 8 a.m. Arizona time, we'll get a little bit more time to expand out on some of these concepts. So I hope it's been informative for you. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Later.
Standing in the gallows with my head in
101.
And even if now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People look crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight. Tight, might rain.